Okay, you guys ready to fucking dance?
Let's dance.
I got hot.
So you think you can dance? Dan McCoy, that is.
Ooh, this is going to be... Wait. Oh, fuck. My notes are all fucked up. Give me a second. Ooh, this is going to be good. Okay. I'm not going to fuck this one up at all. And... Hey, it's me, Stuart Wellington of the Flophouse, and I'm here to present a Flophouse Mini presented by Minnie's Bar. That's right. But before we get into the meat of this delicious podcast sandwich, Elliot, I think you have a couple of words for our listeners.
I do have a couple of words for our listeners. What? I've got four words, in fact. Masters of the Universe. That's right. March 19th, in only a couple weeks, we are going to be doing our newest online live show. The Flophouse is coming at you live on your own computer. You don't have to get dressed. You don't even have to bathe. You don't have to shave. You don't have to clip those nails, put on makeup, any of the things you normally do when you go outside. Put on your wig, put on your hook. Any of the things you normally do, you don't have to worry about it because you can sit at home on your own computer and watch us talk about the Masters of the Universe movie. This is the 1987 Dolph Lundgren, Courtney Cox, Billy Barty, Frank Langella classic, question mark? I haven't watched it since I was a kid when I saw it in the theaters, and I cannot wait to see it again and see if it holds up or even if I even care about He-Man anymore the way I loved him so much when I was a kid. That's Saturday, March 19th on your computer screen. It's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. How do you get tickets to this? It's easy peasy. Let me tell you, go to theflophouse.simpletix.com. Again, that's theflophouse.simpletix.com. The tickets cost you only $10. And what do you get for that, Alexander Hamilton? I'll tell you. You get access to this all-new show, a show we have never done before, with exclusive, never-before-seen PowerPoint presentations we will never do again. We're going to be taking Q&As from the audience. There'll probably be some polls. We'll have some other kind of comedy bit that we have yet to figure out what it is. Guess what? You can't make it that night. You can't make it that time. That is okay. Get your ticket. It gives you 1 week of access to a recording of the live show. You can still watch it. You can still enjoy it. Watch it as many times as you want for 1 week. Just put it on forever, like an art installation, like The Clock, and just or that 24-hour Vertigo. Just keep it going. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the Flophouse live show. I'm super excited about it. I cannot wait to talk He-Man with these two He-Men, Stuart and Dan, and maybe we'll have a good time. In fact, I think we know we'll have a good time. So go to theflophouse.simpletix.com. Tickets are going fast. Now, it's the internet. There's infinite space, but I'm still going to act like there's limited supplies. So it's all about digital false scarcity, everybody. Crypto. Come on. Let's go. Theflophouse.simpletix.com. That's Saturday, March 19th, and then a recording for 1 week afterwards. Come see the show. It's going to be really fun. Stuart, back to you.
Okay, so as I mentioned before, this is a Flophouse Mini brought to you by Minnie's Bar. And here at the Flophouse, we normally watch a bad movie.
Now, what kind of money are you going to give us for the sponsorship, Stuart? This, Minnie's Bar sponsorship.
I'll give you a drink or two.
Over the years,
I remember you saying that 2020 and 2021 were the two payments. Best years in the history of your barkeeping profession.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, that's a thing. I mean, just in general, 2020 and 2021, and now 2022, nothing bad is happening. It's only going up. Only good stuff. It's like oops, all good stuff. That's why Minnie's is getting a little taste here, dipping its beak. So normally what we do here on the Flophouse is we interrogate Stuart for promoting his businesses.
That's what we do. What the podcast is about.
We normally watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. But you know what? This is a Flophouse Mini brought to you by Minnie's Bar. So we can do whatever the fuck
live
we
show,
want.
March 19th. Now. Live show March 19th. Yeah. I want to advertise something we're all going to get a taste of.
Seeking parody. It's going to be tough.
Maniac of New York, the Bronx is burning on comic book shelves now.
If you just want to send me cash, I don't have anything to promote, but.
On,
Stuart.
So, I don't, just to pull back the curtain a little bit, open up the robe, if you will. My DMs are flooded, okay, on various platforms with people requesting the different topics for the minis. And the one that I get the most, of course, is what we're going to be doing tonight. And that's exactly what we're doing. We are doing two boy talking tube to two dudes tonight. That's right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, classic mini.
Now, two boy talking tube to two dudes tonight, that's right, is when I... Stuart, a.k.a. Two Boy, is going to talk about Tube, that's television, to Two Dudes, that's Dan and Elliot, tonight, which is when we're recording it. That's right, because it's not definitely not wrong.
No, Stuart, can you be clear? Is it Two Boy or is it Tube Boy? Because you were Tube Man in the film Psycho Gorman.
Yeah. that makes it, it's understandable that there's a certain amount of confusion. That's the thing. I'm trying to like make it as difficult as possible for people to track me down or understand me.
It makes sense then why your Def Leppard podcast had the hardest to spell title of any podcast in the history of recording.
Cool. Another dig at me today. I don't know what's going on. Okay, no, that's fine. Let's. So normally what we do is we talk about a bunch of different TV shows, or we talk about like TV awards, but tonight we're going to do a hyper focus. Okay. We're just going to focus on a single television show. And I want to talk about a show that I think is kind of the moment. People are talking about it on Twitter quite a bit. It's kind of gritty, and we're dealing with teenagers who are kind of navigating the difficult world of like filled with like sex and drugs and complicated relationships. So tonight we're going to be talking about Euphoria. We're going to be talking about Euphoria, the 15th episode of the second season of Beverly Hills 90210.
Okay.
The episode is...
I mean, we're in luck.
There it is. There's the other shoe I was waiting for.
There's the punchline. We're in luck in that I've seen neither that nor the TV show Euphoria, so I'm equally ignorant of whatever we're discussing.
And to help me with this, I brought in a expert of Beverly Hills 90210, Alexander Smith, our producer. Hey, Alex, thanks for joining us.
Oh, look at him. He just changed his background to the cast.
It's great to be here, guys. What a pleasure. How's it going?
Oh, wow. I was expecting like a full speech.
Coming in hot. Alex is coming in hot.
Bringing the energy.
He put a lot of energy into the changing of backgrounds, I think. So just to give, on the subject of backgrounds, just to give you kind of an idea, the name Euphoria in this case is spelled U, the number 4, E-A, okay? And that is a reference to the, that is the drug, the name of the drug that is basically ecstasy in the Beverly Hills 90210 universe. And it serves as both the title of the episode and it serves as a pretty important plot point.
Now, I would like to argue that that would be pronounced Euphoria and not Euphoria.
And
that's just
that's the
it's a small distinction, but it's important. Yeah, it's important.
U4EA, like the company.
Yeah,
U4.
Yeah. Electronic Arts. Yeah,
yeah. That's the argument Dan's having with the dealer, and ends up not scoring any.
Yeah, I'm like four has all of it in there. The number four. You just say that
while Dan's plug rolls his eyes.
Well, actually, Dan, it is funny that you say that because the dealer. The Euphoria dealer in the episode is wearing a shirt that just has a number 4 on it. And that's how you know that you're talking to a Euphoria dealer, is the giant 4 on their shirt.
Yeah, so like...
That is usually drug dealers do have their branded shirts that they wear to announce to the world, this is my job and what I do, and it's handed out by corporate HQ. Yeah.
Or a trilby with a bright orange band. That's the other way you know you're talking to a drug dealer.
I guess it works. I take back my objection.
Okay, I'll allow it. In the Star Wars universe, you know you're talking to a drug dealer because he has a name like Sleazebago, and he's asking you if you want any death sticks.
Yeah. If the name wasn't enough, he's specifically doing his job in front of you. And I would imagine in the Beverly Hills 90210 universe, if we were to fast forward to modern times where people use Cash App and Venmo, the symbol would be some kind of 4 to their drug dealer to indicate that they're cash apping them for Euphoria, right? Right, Alex?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For the drug dealer's taxes, so they itemize which drugs the money was
for. It's similar to doing like a skier or like a snowflake or something.
Oh, is that what you do?
Okay. An emoji or something. I was thinking like a dollar sign followed by a 4, but that just becomes $4.
That's just $4.
Then so now we're
You have to send it to them. Now we're at McDonald's. Pay whatever the price is, you have to give it to them in $4 increments. That's right. How they know what it's
for. Which doesn't work out. Well, depending on inflation, I guess, because at the time, back in 1990, a single hit of Euphoria would cost you $25.
Which revisiting that episode, I was very surprised. That seems expensive for that time. Oh, but these are kids from Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah. This is a rich neighborhood.
I mean, I was watching this with Charlene, who also inspired this episode, by the way, because she was the one who was like, "Hey, isn't that the name of the drug from 90210?" And I'm like, "No, it's this thing that I keep getting Twitter memes about." But yeah, she in her experience at the time, that would be the cost of one ecstasy, one dose of ecstasy.
One ecstasy.
I'll take one ecstasy, sir. Yes, bag it. I'll take a paper bag. Thank you. Now, I mean, but I understand why you think it would be expensive, but it's an expensive neighborhood. As this title tells us, the monthly rent in Beverly Hills was $9,210, which is a lot of money for monthly rent, especially in 1990. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you knew you were talking to your landlord if they had 90210 on their shirt.
Yes, exactly. That's all the landlords had to wear. People forget that back then, before the end of the Reagan-Bush revolution, it was legal law that everyone had to wear a shirt that denoted what their occupation was, which made it very easy to round up drug dealers. It's why the war on drugs was won, and we no longer have to fight it anymore.
The before we get into the meat of this episode— Alex, can you explain a little bit about your bona fides?
The boot.
As a Beverly Hills 90210 expert?
As an expert, my bona fides.
Yeah, please.
I will say I was a fan of this show from the first episode. I watched it the entire run, and it was a long run. It's a 10-season show, and I've watched it all the way through. Many, many times since then.
I feel like back in college, you were still like catching it on the release day. Like you were watching it.
Oh, yeah.
Because you couldn't like catch it on
Hulu.
Yeah,
it was my regular Wednesday watch on even in college when they had moved on to, I don't know, be boring adults with jobs and stuff, you know, that I still watched it. You know, pretty religiously throughout that.
Did any of them ever graduate to being a Melrose Place? Like, when a New Mutant becomes a member of the X-Men, they're like, "You did it. You graduated. You're going from Beverly Hills 90210 to Melrose Place. Now you live in a steamy apartment complex in LA."
There is a crossover. They introduced Melrose Place by they introduced the character that takes you to Melrose Place initially was a guest star on 90210.
Oh, and David Kelly, during the episode of Beverly Hills 90210, he went to the camera and went, "Psst, come with me. I'm going to take you somewhere." And the camera followed him over to Melrose Place.
That would have been a great transition. They absolutely should have done that.
Like,
just whisper to the camera and like drag you down the street to Melrose Place.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been so good. I don't believe they did anything like that. But you know,
this is going to be a real tangent. I wanted to go off on a slight mispronunciation that Stuart had earlier, where he was saying Hulu, but for a moment he said Hulu, and made me think of like Jacques Tati guest starring on an episode of Beverly Hills 90210. And Dan, what would that be like? Give us a taste of what that would be like.
Well, it's mostly you know, Monsieur Hulu is pretty you know, dialogue free. So just imagine that I'm doing a bunch of sort of intricate slapstick that's more whimsical than it is funny.
And
like,
and
you're never
going to
really
pit.
Laugh at me, but you're going to say, "Oh, I see. That was kind of interesting." Alex, who's your favorite 90210? which one is your
I was a Brandon guy. Still am.
Brandon.
Still really am a
which
Brandon
one is he?
Guy.
Was that?
That's Jason Priestley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Brandon Walsh.
Yeah. And I feel like he is the emotional and moral core of the show, I think.
That's why this is such an emotional episode, because he's, you know, he goes through some tough times.
He does. He changes dramatically from a guy who's not high into a guy who's high.
Very high, yeah.
And it ruins his relationship with everyone in his life.
So would you classify this as a very special episode? Was this an episode with a message for our nation's
youth?
Well,
that was the thing. Like, I feel like at this time, a lot of 90210 episodes were kind of like ripped from the headlines, very special episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Season one of 90210, it was an issues show specifically. Like, every episode deals with a, you know, some kind of PSA topic or teen
something for
issue.
Teens to talk to their parents about over breakfast. for like around 5 hours cooler. Is what it seems like they do.
Cooler at home. I mean, many homes do have breakfast. Water coolers.
We
in
had
them,
a Culligan water cooler true. When I was growing up.
Yeah.
I just outed myself as a Richie, I guess.
No. For a while, we had a water cooler, too. Like, Eureka Water. I don't want to throw any shade at my hometown, but Eureka Water tasted gross.
Describe that taste. Top chef it up. Tell me what notes you were detecting.
Sulfurous.
Yeah.
Eggs. Were the notes. Yeah.
Okay.
So like a liquid fart.
Let's get into the meat of this episode.
This is complicated. I think maybe Elliot has the talent to get us there, but there's some kind of connection between euphoria,
mm-hmm, yep.
where the four is like you're being brought to a euphoric state and mm-hmm. eureka water where water reeks. I don't know. I don't have that.
I mean, if it's sulfurous, I would call it euphardia. Maybe.
There we go.
All right. Yeah. That's great. So the episode begins. We're introduced to Brandon Walsh and his girlfriend, Emily. They're dating. They're ready to make the next step and move into each other's lockers. So they, of course, decide
Is that a thing that teenagers do?
Like, because when I was in high school, my locker was assigned to me by the school. Like, I didn't have to find one and then
but that's the thing.
Pay rent on it.
Well, they have their own lockers, but they're going to make space, like make a shelf for the other person in their locker.
Hold on. Now, makes sense.
Dan, this is a real thing that kids do.
This makes sense in real life, you know, like adult life, not real life. I mean, teen's life is real. I'm sorry. Adult life. It makes sense to, you know, clear out a shelf or a drawer or whatever and be like, I'm going to have a change of clothes over here for, like, when we spend the night because we live.
Yeah.
X in different amount places. Of time away.
Yeah, right.
I don't, like, this is just sheer laziness. If you're like, can I leave my math textbook in here so I don't have to walk down the
hall? It's a gesture like a promise ring, I think.
Yeah. There's two critical pieces of information here, I think, that are important. One is in the universe of the show, Brandon is a very eager student. He's a very good student, a very enthusiastic student. And the idea is that he had complained at some time to Emily about not having enough room in his locker for all of his books because he's so smart or whatever. And then the other thing that you got to remember about 90210 in general is that it is a show about 16-year-olds played by 30-year-olds, written by 50-year-olds who make very little effort to actually get into the mind of a teenager. Like you get the feeling throughout this whole show that if they could just take the parents out and just put these people in an apartment and give them a day job, they would do it immediately. So this is clearly just them trying to figure out a way to be like, well, what's a good analog to them moving in together? Oh, well, they have a locker at school, so we'll just do that.
I want to tell a story about grown-ups because I'm a grown-up, but I'm stuck on this stupid show about teens. Exactly. So how do I make my grown-up story be about teens?
So they're trying to make the next step. So they decide to go on a date to a cool, like, floating all ages party you find the location from a special person and then you'll go to the secret party. And of course, the rest of the gang.
Like an elf?
Yeah, kind of like that. Kind of
special person?
And the rest of the rest of the gang finds out. And though they have their reservations about Emily, because she's not a core cast member, right, Alex? She's just kind of like, she's the bad girl who's Brandon's new girlfriend.
At this point, I think she had been in 8 episodes, but she and Brandon have become very serious. As we now know because of the locker thing.
So the rest of the gang find out about it. They're
I
all
wish they had
go.
Taken it even further and they were like, I'm ready to go to the next step. Can you keep a little space in your pocket for my change so that in case I need it and I'm far from my pocket, I can get it from your pocket? Yeah, this
now,
is a big
step. Now,
why
would you be far from your pocket? Now, I don't understand.
It's a metaphor, Dan, but maybe it's in a different pair of pants. You're in your gym clothes, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Your jean pocket is closer to my heart than my jean pocket is to my hand, is the kind of romantic thing you can say.
You're taller than I am, so I would have to reach down less low.
Well, in a cis relationship, I don't think we even need to start talking about the tyranny of pockets, about how women's clothes often don't feature enough pockets.
That's true.
That's true. Or if they do have pockets, the pockets are decorative. They're not actually functional.
Okay, so there's an interesting element about this party is that the way that you get your you get to it is you have to take an egg to a corner store, a specific corner store, and you give the egg to the person running the store.
You know what?
And he will give you the directions.
I did see this episode. Because I remember them with the egg offering it to strangers, thinking that that's how they get the directions to the party. Ugh, I did see this.
Steve and Andrea famously, I think this scene is one of the more iconic early scenes from 90210. Where Steve and Andrea go to the wrong store, and Steve is trying to, in a very, very great comic performance from Ian Ziering, he is trying to exchange an egg with a lady who has no idea what he's talking about and threatens to call the cops on them, and they have to run out. So that's a scene a lot of people have seen.
But before we get to that, our characters have to get ready for the party. It's a Friday night. They all decide to lie to their parents, which is tough because, you know, they are dressed to go out. They're all wearing all black. Shannon Doherty's wearing a Canadian tuxedo that is decidedly not black, but everybody else is wearing, I guess, party clothes. And Andrea is, of course,
Andrea
is dressed like Elaine Benes, like she is always dressed.
And Elaine Benes was dressed like a woman from the 1940s much of the time. So,
well, and they do the thing where with Andrea, the reason she wants to go to this underground rave party because she's such an adult, she's so much more of an adult than her friends.
Because the actress is 12 years older than Tori Spelling,
I have to admit, when I saw this show as a kid, I thought she was supposed to be a grown-up for a lot of the run.
Yeah, she seemed...
I thought that, thought it was weird she was hanging out with these high school students who also
she seemed
like
a teacher or something.
Yeah, I thought she was a teacher.
See, and the weird thing is the rare times I saw this show, like, she was the one that I had a crush on.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrea is great, but the way she convinces herself that she needs to go to this rave is because there might be a breaking story because she runs the school newspaper.
Makes sense to me.
And she, oh my God, it's, well, Stuart, continue.
So they lie to their various parents, except for Kelly, who tells her hot, well-dressed mom that she tells her the truth. Her mom can get it, dude.
You say that as if it's a surprise that her mom would be hot and well-dressed.
These
key plot
points. She's got this real, business bitch attitude. I'm all about it.
Kelly's mom is Stewart's type for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, why isn't she stepping on my neck?
Okay.
I'm like, I demand this to happen. Kelly tells her mom.
She's a character on a TV show for one thing. But anyway, continue.
So, Kelly has a relationship with her mom that she believes she can tell her mom anything, and as long as she's being honest, her mom will let her do it. Not so much in this instance, because her mom knows that she is potentially going to an illegal underground rave party. So she tells her no. So Kelly's like, okay, I guess I won't go, and puts a bathrobe on over her dress and sits in bed until the moment her mom leaves, and then immediately takes that bathrobe off and sneaks out.
Real quick, as an aside, Kelly's mom had a coke addiction in season one that Kelly helped her get through. So they have they're very tight knit. They have a very tight knit relationship at this point. But so that's why Kelly thinks she can do whatever she wants. But the Kelly's mom has also been to a lot of these types of parties and says, no, there's drugs at those parties. I don't want you going.
Yeah, and she's got that kind of like super tight blonde haircut and big shoulder pads that make you think of a cocaine dealer's girlfriend.
Now, I do. I want to take a break from
Kelly's
mom.
Are how you know.
Yeah,
because that's what they do the coke off of. You just lay out a line on that shoulder pad and then snort it up.
So like the helmet with the beer cans on it that you wear at the stadium.
Exactly.
It's shoulder pads with two lines on each shoulder pad with little straws that go up to your nose.
Yeah. Little dollar rolled up dollar bills that go right into your nose. Yeah.
Also, I want to give a tip to all teens out there who, wanted to sneak out. If you're going to pull this rope trick, you have to lay the track for it ahead of time. You have to establish yourself as a robe-wearing person because otherwise your parent is just going to be like, why are you hanging out in that robe? You know, so
that's
just
a good point.
You got to play the long con.
Yeah, that's a tip for teen from Dan.
Another Dan teen tip. Okay.
But yeah, you don't get magazines, tips for teens.
Sorry, Elliot, go ahead.
No, I was just making a reference to a Sparks song. Continue, Alex.
I was going to say, you can't establish yourself as too much of a robe person because they might think, oh, he's just going to go out in his robe like he usually does.
Yeah, like the Big Lebowski or the Dude Lebowski, I guess. Yeah, yeah.
So
not the big one.
The big one does not go out in his robe.
I get the dude size. I'm not that hungry.
I went to a Big and Dude store.
A lot of cargo shorts there, I'd imagine.
Yeah, for sure. It's all cargo shorts and three-piece suits, yeah.
Okay, so the gang all meets up at the Peach Pit, except for Andrea and Steve, because as we learn later, Steve is meeting Andrea's grandmother, and they are held up.
Apparently Andrea's grandmother makes a really good chopped liver.
Yeah.
And Steve, there's this scene that I really wish was in it.
Yes.
Where Steve was apparently just begging for more and more chopped liver over at Andrea's grandmother.
Yeah. Yeah. He keeps cleaning his plate and then saying more. Yeah.
Like, that's why they're late, is because he wouldn't stop eating.
He keeps saying, if you insist. And she's like, I don't insist. I'm almost out, and I was planning on eating this all week.
I was hoping to have some also, but eat the rest of it. She's desperately in the kitchen chopping more liver to keep his ravenous appetite.
She's got to go find more liver.
This is a road to intestinal distress of some kind.
It's late. The stores are closed. She has to get more liver. She's breaking into a grocery store to get liver to chop it up for Steve.
It's a real Little Shop of Horrors situation with Steve.
Little Shop of Livers. Yeah.
Wait a minute. You have a liver. I'll take yours.
I should have said Little Chop of Livers. Anyway, continue, Stuart.
So the gang's all there. They're dressed all in black, which is what you wear when you go to a rave. They look out of place for the Peach Pit because that's just their regular local hang. And we find out that Brandon has to be back early the next morning for his shift. So they get the directions, they leave extra directions for Andrea and Steve, and they go downtown to a corner store where they exchange an egg with the somewhat bewildered man behind the, or like scared man. He plays the scene very strangely. The guy working
the counter. I'm not sure what his. I think it's just supposed to be mysterious. Like, they're not sure the egg exchange is going to work.
Now, you say exchange an egg. Does he hand them an egg in return?
That would
for
make
their
sense.
Egg?
They keep saying exchange an egg, but that's not what they're.
Yeah,
that's they don't get an egg back.
But I think exchange an egg makes sense because they walk in with an egg.
Okay,
they hand the egg to the guy behind the counter, and he then asks them for $10, which in my headcanon. He just made that up. He's like, I'm taking.
He saw that these are newbies, and he's like,
and
you know what? I'll get an extra ten. I'll get an extra
ten
on top of this.
But he doesn't take $10 from all of them. He only takes $10 for the whole group. So I think he's got some room to grow.
He's got modest goals.
He says, I'll get $10 from these kids. I'll use it to buy a ticket to the Flophouse Live show March 19th. That's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Right, just go
to theflophouse.com/simpletix and or Slophash. Sorry, I got the slop hash? The slop hash.
I can go for it.
That's what Steve's eating over at Andrea's grandmother's house.
Sorry, go to theflophouse.simpletix.com. Theflophouse.simpletix.com, and he buys that ticket. Get yourself a big bowl of slop hash. Eat it during the show. We don't care. We can't smell it through the screen.
That's the beauty of it. You could be in a robe eating slop hash in your own home.
You could just
the government can't tell you not to do
your
that.
Your grandma's just chopping away at that slop hash in the kitchen, putting it in a tube that goes straight to your mouth. You're in a robe. You can watch the show. Go for it. No dress code.
Where a
don't
kid
have to
can
dress
be a
up
kid.
In black.
The and another important plot point is that this is when David buys a flask of whiskey, and everybody gives him shit for it. And he's like, somebody can enjoy a little bit of alcohol and not be an alcoholic. And I'm like, that's what an alcoholic's going to say. Which we will find out later. His character, I believe, develops a drinking problem, right?
I mean, do you mean in the episode itself?
No, over the course of the next couple episodes.
Because he definitely has a drinking problem over the course of the episode.
Yeah.
David develops a drug problem later in the series. I'm trying to remember. They all have it's at some point the show liked to introduce them to different dependency issues, but I can remember David's drug problem, but I'm spacing out.
There was that season where Tori Spelling just keeps buying Beanie Babies on eBay and she's spending way too much on it.
I love the delicacy with which you put that. You, like, at some point, the show likes to introduce them to various dependency issues. As if it's like, oh, Kelly, have you met compulsive shopping? I don't know. You're like, whatever.
No, that is how the show works. And that because I mentioned earlier that season one was like an issue show where each show covered like a different thing. And this is we're right in the middle of them transitioning the show into more of like a soap opera. Like a teen soap opera, where it's all serial plot lines and stuff, and this is kind of a hybrid of the two. This is why this is kind of the best era of the show, is because they're doing an issue show, but there's all these like longer storylines going on.
So the gang follows the directions, and the directions bring them to a warehouse party in downtown. And speaking of things that are brought to you by things, the show is brought to you by something.
You know what? You said that. You said you'd do it, you'd handle it, and you did, Sue. Good. You get an extra serving of slop hash afterwards.
It is incredible to see a pro just stick the landing that
exactly
that hard.
Hi, I'm looking for a movie.
Oh, I got you.
There's that new foreign film with the time travel.
There's an amazing documentary about queer history on streaming.
Have I told you about this classic where giant robots fight?
Or there's that one that most critics hated, but I thought was actually pretty good.
Ooh, I know. The one with the huge car chase, and then there's that scene where
the car jumps over the submarine.
Wow, who are you eclectic movie experts?
Well, I'm Ivy Wadiwa.
I'm Drea Clark.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi. And together, we host the movie podcast, Maximum Film.
New episodes every week on MaximumFun.org.
And you actually just walked into our recording booth.
Oh, weird. Sorry. I thought this was a video store.
You seem like a lady with a lot of problems.
Well, Manolo, we have a show to promote. It's called Backtrack Game Show.
It's a family-friendly podcast where listeners submit games and we play them with callers from around the world.
No, sounds good. New episodes happen every other Wednesday on MaximumFun.org.
It's a fast and loose oasis of absurd innocence and naivete. And
are you writing a poem?
No, I'm just saying things from my memory. And it's a nice break from reality. Is that, are we allowed to say that?
I don't know. It sounds bad.
It comes with a 100% happiness guarantee.
It does not. Come for the games and stay for the chaos.
The Flophouse is sponsored in part by Lumi Labs. You may have heard about microdosing. If you look around on the internet, you find all sorts of people are microdosing to feel healthier and perform better. Well, our show, you guessed it, is sponsored by microdose gummies from Lumi Labs. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And in my experience, that is what they are. They do not serve to impair you, so you cannot function as a human being. They just make you feel more relaxed and happier, and so you can sort of handle maybe the ups and downs. You can chill out a bit, get some better sleep. Anyway, microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdosegummies.com and use code FLOP, that's FLOP, to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that is microdosegummies.com and code FLOP. Stuart.
Looks like I got a Jumbotron. Looking for a totally scarifying, spooktacular read? MaxFun member and indie horror novelist Nick J. DuPont's debut novel, Cat's Blood, is available now. Join a brilliant young mother as she struggles to protect her son in this award-winning tale of dread. Kindle version is only $7.99. Special bonus for Flop fans, Nick has had a letter read on the Flophouse. First person to message him on Twitter with the correct letter and episode will receive a free signed copy. Oh. Visit nickjdupont.com today. That's right. Visit nickjdupont.com.
And we have another Jumbotron. This is a personal Jumbotron. This is a message for Connor, last name withheld, and the message is from Deming. And the message goes like this. Connor, spending Saturday mornings eating breakfast in bed and listening to the Flop Boys with you is one of my favorite activities, including things we used to do pre-pandemic. Happy Saturday to my favorite person, including parasocial podcast people. I love, admire, and appreciate you. Let me know if you need your coffee reheated. What a sweet message. Aww. That was really nice.
Aww, that's nice. They got a little tradition.
Yeah, Dan, how can other people send sweet, sweet messages through the Jumbotron?
Well, if you go to MaximumFun.com/Jumbotron, you can arrange one. It comes through the network. They'll handle that end of it. But you can pay $100 for a personal message, $200 for a business message. Again, that's at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. I'm sorry, that very obvious question took me by surprise.
Now, I liked the way that you said it reminded me of how Alex described them introducing the 90210 cast members to vices, I guess, to dependencies.
Yeah.
You said that if you go to that website, it will be they can arrange one, like yeah, very discreetly.
There will be someone.
Your Jumbotron will come in a plain brown paper wrapper. Mm-hmm.
You will have a guide to take you through the experience. I wonder, I want to know.
Yeah, on your sure, on your credit card report, it shows up as something else entirely.
It shows up as like as message.com or yeah, something like that.
I want to know what the closest someone has gotten to sneaking a business message in as a personal message.
That's a like good question.
There's got to be an art form to that, to figuring out how to make it.
Because you can't sneak it too like much, or else the people listening won't understand that it's for a product.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so while we ponder that question, our gang is now in a really cool warehouse rave. Now while we were watching this episode, we realized like the music sounded really kind of wank, and so I looked it up, and apparently.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad
I'm not
thing.
Sure what that
was. It was not, okay. not good.
Wank versus dank.
Thank you.
Wank is the bad one.
Exactly. And so dank is good. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, just like 90210, I'm just trying to keep you old people up to snuff with what the kids are talking about.
Snuff the thing kids are into.
The thing is,
just
I'm also
to keep
drinking.
Everybody on the 411.
I'm also drinking quite a bit, and I'm speaking before I think about it. So apparently when these episodes originally aired, there's music by the Thompson Twins and fucking Sisters of Mercy
yeah.
in this scene.
They
that
had
was
everything,
not the case
yeah.
in, I guess, what, in syndication? Or I have no idea when the change would have happened.
I think if you watch them in syndication, they still have all the good music in it. If you get the DVDs or the or you watch them on streaming sites, they have a bunch of sound alike and fill in music instead of they have the hits of the day playing in all of these scenes.
It's a big show, you know. It's a big show.
Yeah,
it was a huge show, and also and as always happens, I'm sure like they negotiate the rights for a particular type of broadcast,
yeah,
not realizing yeah. there will be other ways that people will watch it. Now I think. Producers are a little more savvy about
yeah.
that, but at the time it was like the same way that like with WKRP in Cincinnati, they would play all these current hits.
Right.
And it's like, well, no one's going to see these shows again. Sure. Throw the songs in. We don't need them for the future.
And that's why you cannot even now get like unedited versions of that series.
Yeah. It's too bad. People say, I want to see a full episode of What We're Up in Cincinnati mm-hmm. and I can't find mm-hmm. it. And I'm like, I got some news for you about how to pronounce the title.
I've got two bad news. two bad news. That's how you say it.
Just like the bad news is bears. Yep.
The most disappointing example of that to me is the state. When
yeah.
the state DVD finally came out, mm-hmm. the $240 worth of Puddin' sketch, they couldn't use sexual healing in that. So they had to replace the music. but it was a live recording with the music playing in the studio. So they had to also overdub the voices again. So you watch oh, that scene, God. It's got a sound-alike track, and they're clearly also overdubbed for the entire thing. And
with older voices.
Yeah, yeah, with their voices, like, you know, from when the DVDs came out. So it's very weird, and yeah, but that's, I mean, that was an MTV show, so they obviously would have had the rights to everything
so
at the time.
So this club, you know, is cool because there's a lot of people with tattoos and interesting hairstyles. Our gang kind of stands out because they're all, you know, they're dressed a little preppy. They all are dressed like they're going to, like, a really cool funeral, except for Dylan. Brenda is wearing, you know, denim on denim. And Dylan is wearing two denim jackets, one underneath the other.
Wow. They call that a Matryoshka Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah. Quite a fit, as the kids would say.
Now, so this rave, where would you put it on the scale from one, meaning a Matrix rave, to 10, meaning the rave from Pusher 1? Where is it more of a Matrix rave where there's just like sweat flying everywhere and everyone is wearing like leather, or is it more of a Pusher rave where everyone's kind of vaguely Danish, Scandinavian, and there's a lot of people just dancing weird dance moves by themselves in corners?
I don't understand this scale.
I would say in the middle, somewhere between a rave where the Charmed ones would show up in an episode of Charmed, or Blade would show up and be killing all the vamps.
Okay, because another scale. Is it on a scale from one, which is vampire rave where blood is spreading, or to 10, which is which is the monster dance party and Little Monsters starring Fred Savage? Where does it land on that?
Okay, I would say it's closer to a vampire rave.
Okay.
So
I'll say, if this helps pinpoint it at all, is every time I see this scene, here's what I think. Because they walk in and they say, one of them says something like, "I don't think we're in Kansas anymore." Again, a great thing for teenagers to be saying to each other. and then another one.
But except that was much more current in 1990 when that was only a 51-year-old reference, as opposed to now when it's an almost 90-year-old reference.
It was probably around the time that Dylan calls David Rico Suave twice. He says it twice in the episode.
Because he's drunk. Yeah, David's already drunk. He's embraced that lifestyle already.
I've got a different scale for the raves. Is it like a one, which would be the cantina, the Mos Eisley cantina, to a 10, which would be not Jabba's pleasure barge, but the droid torture room in Jabba's palace? That's a 10.
Okay, yeah.
I think that all of your examples are too interesting for this.
Okay, fair.
Because what happens in this scene is they walk into a room that has, like, you know, that wire frame, like, light rigging stuff everywhere.
Yep.
The lights blinking and fog machines going off.
Classic rave.
And they walk into a machine.
Couple of couches.
They walk into a room like that, and they say, we're not in Kansas anymore. And one of them says, we're definitely not in Beverly Hills anymore. And they walk into a party that looks like every party you've seen on television your whole life.
The thing is, it sounds like you'd see in Beverly Hills. Like, it sounds like a Beverly Hills party.
Oh, yeah. It absolutely is. I mean, I think what they do is every once in a while, they will show you, like, a biker. And they'll be like, this is what, it's a rough crowd.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then at one point, you see someone smoking something.
Well,
you see someone
what you don't understand is, like, we're only seeing what's in front of the camera. Behind the camera, everyone's, like, totally nude. Like, they're just, like, setting things on fire. It's insane.
To the side of the camera, it's like, it's the Grand Ole Opry Country Bear Jamboree. So it's not like Beverly Hills at all. It's like a southern, thing, you know.
The Rockafire Explosion Band is playing there.
That would be so funny.
I mean, the juxtaposition makes it even more horrifying.
We got to go to this party. The Rockafire Explosion is playing.
They keep, like, they'll point in a direction and it cuts to, like, some stock footage of a dog jumping through flaming hoops and stuff.
To the old black and white footage of the guy getting hit in the belly with a cannonball. Yeah.
So one of my favorite...
What is this place? Not Kansas.
So we have one of my favorite exchanges in the episode is Brandon and Emily sit down on a couch and they're kind of surveying the crowd. And they point out this guy who's very clearly a drug dealer. And Emily explains that he is dealing euphoria, and he's like, in front of everybody? And she's like, yeah, you know, whatever, everybody does it, $25 a hit. And Brandon's not interested. But then his friends all show up, and then Brandon explains all this shit. He's like, he's an expert. He's already an expert. Yeah. He's like, that guy's a drug dealer, and his name is this, and this is how much it costs. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he really shows off all of the knowledge he just got from his girlfriend, who is sitting there the whole time.
Oh, man, it's so great. Yeah, so while that's going on, David's getting drunker. Dylan and Brenda are, you know, just dancing and having a good time.
Everybody's dancing and having a good time. Brandon is not dancing because he doesn't dance. That's a big character thing for Brandon, is he does not dance. And you kind of wonder why he wanted to. At this point, what is the point of sitting on a couch?
Yeah, why would you go to this
in a room like this and watching? I mean, I guess maybe watching your friends dance is fun. I don't know.
Yeah. So Emily makes.
I mean, is he like pointing and laughing at them and being like, "Look at that! Look at that!"
They do put in a few shots of him like pointing at David. David is already acting all kinds of goofy.
Uh-huh. I do think that it is fun to watch your friends dance, but with. You know, apologies to Jordan Morris, noted advocate of the non-dancing lifestyle. I find that it's fun to watch your friends dance from your position on the dance floor where you are also dancing.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, the number one, I like dancing. But number two, I feel like off to the side, you're not really getting a good sense of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if I was, like, reclining on a palanquin or something.
Yeah.
So you have a little bit of height. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Being fanned by Musselman.
Yeah, actually, it's pretty good if you can convince yourself that your friends are dancing for you, not near you.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, entertain me. Yes, cavort for my interest. Yes.
So while
they don't even remember that you're there,
give them an old double clap, a little, you know, one of those.
While this is all going on, Steve and Andrea are trying to connect the dots and follow their friends. And they end up in the wrong store, and they have very strange conversations with a woman who wants to call the police on them because they're trying to give her an egg. And that's
they're on something.
It's a classic bit. Something. It's great.
I mean, part of the issue, I guess, was them asking Richard Linklater to direct that part, that aspect of the episode, that storyline. He's like, I kind of wanted to see them wander around and interact with the people of Beverly Hills, you know.
So meanwhile, Emily decides to take things up a notch, and she secretly doses Brandon's water soda. I don't know.
She goes to get them sodas, and they are very. I mean, I guess they're supposed to be Sprite or something.
Yeah.
But they look more like cocktails. They're in like little short cocktail, tumblers, and she slips euphoria in both cups.
I wonder if that's an instance of them originally supposed to be having actual drinks and someone saying, no, no, they're teen characters. We can't have them drinking. We'll say it's soda. What do you think?
Running throughout all of this is the fact that these teens, unlike my experience, myself and other teens that I know, I'm not currently a teen, but teens I've known throughout my life.
You still keep in touch with the lifestyle.
I'm of course have my finger on the pulse, but
please take your finger off that teen's pulse.
They are all at this point. Dylan is like a 17-year-old recovering alcoholic at this point.
Oh, okay.
Brandon had one episode where he drank too much and totaled his car. Mm. Everyone on Kelly is opposed to any kind of substance because she saw her mom go through stuff. At this point, all of them have these like they're all like opposed to stuff, except for David. Obviously, is just like I want to have a good time, and he has some drinks. But it's
like they're all in recovery.
Yeah. Instead of being like teens on the one side of it, where you want to just go out and have as many different experiences with as many different chemicals as you can, which a lot of people went through. They are the show has positioned them on the other side of that, where they're like they're like chiding each other for every choice that they make. So they get punished for anything that they do. And Brandon definitely does not want to drink a cocktail So it wouldn't have made sense for the show for them to just be like, oh, let's relax and have one cocktail. Because I on see. This show, no one relaxes and has one cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, you have a drink and you get expelled from school right before graduation. That's
how it works. So Brandon gets super high. Emily gets super high. They're like, she reveals to him what happened, but by then he's too far gone. He doesn't care. They end up...
he's just waving at bats that he thinks are flying around.
They end up reclining together on the hood of his convertible with him with his shirt off. The rest of the gang decide to know that they want to leave. David is wasted and he's barfing everywhere.
Yep.
Brandon starts to burn some bridges. He's mean to Dylan. He's mean to Brenda. He doesn't care. There's some hilariously, I would say, really effective high acting from Jason Priestley here.
Yeah.
And
what does he do?
A lot of swaying.
Mm.
I think they did get the club drug thing correct, because he's not like a lot of old movies. If somebody gets in takes a substance of any kind, they just like immediately they're seeing like the swirling lines and they're like going crazy, and they're, you show them like running down the street with their shirt off or whatever.
In the 1970s, they always thought they could fly and jumped off buildings.
That's all
anyone on drugs did.
This is seriously all he does, is he lounges on the hood of his car and love bombs all his friends. Yeah. And he's just like, I love you. You're so great. And everyone's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, they get so mad at him. Everyone gets so mad at him, even though he's just like, he's just rolling, you know? And I mean, and the Emily drugging him is definitely not cool, but there is like a quality to this where they really, really punish Brandon for one time taking a club drug or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all super shitty about it. And then like, it doesn't let up, you know, so they end up taking his keys and leaving him and Emily there.
Yeah.
That seems like the worst solution.
Seems like the worst solution, because of course the cops show up, because that's, you know, that was bound to happen. And they end up running, leaving his car behind in this warehouse. Uh-oh, I don't think that car is going to have a good night. Everybody gets home.
You know there's going to be some possums sleeping in the trunk of that car the morning.
Brandon gets home at 6 a.m. He gets home at 6 a.m. Brenda is still, having ditched him, is waiting up for him and makes him feel super bad.
it's so fucked for up.
Showing up late. So, and I'm like, took his keys and then left him there.
Yeah. She says, every time a car drove by, I got up and looked out the window. And it's like, you fucking left.
It's not going to be him unless he learned to fucking hotwire it.
Yeah.
You had a car that could bring the person home. That
should have
been
the car
that you was observing, your own, as you drove it.
And every time I heard a plane go by, I thought you might parachute out of it. You didn't.
I really had no idea how you were going to get home, because we took your keys again. But she also says something like, I thought you had changed forever or something. it's like, man, this is really, really, the consequences of this night.
I mean, that's
are
what happens anytime
so
I take
enormous.
Like too strong of an edible, is I'm like, I'm always going to be high.
But he's like, Dylan, I love you, man. And Dylan's like, you've changed. You're bad now.
You used to be about the hate.
And Brenda's also like,
how are you going to fight the one world government if you got love in your heart? Come on, man.
And Brenda's like, Brandon, our parents trusted us. And I could only imagine having that conversation with my brother. I don't know. So of course,
I have to say, if their parents named them Brenda and Brandon, they deserve whatever they get from messing up their kids by giving them almost the exact same name. That was crazy. I thought it was crazy as a kid.
I mean, they are twins.
I'm a twin. I'm a twin. I don't have the same name as my sister.
So
we have different sounding names.
You actually should. Your parents actually.
Yeah, you're bad.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. You changed. I don't want them to end up in jail.
This confrontation ends where Brandon's like, I got to be up in a few hours to work my shift at the Peach Pit. And I'm like, okay, so that's going to be the next scene. That is not the next scene. The next scene is Dylan driving him to pick up his car. So I guess he had enough time to go back to pick up his car, which is now ruined. The like all the tires are gone, the doors are gone, it's been spray painted.
Yeah.
There were some very efficient vandals who were just like, we are all over this.
Yeah. And that's real John Hughes fear of the city type stuff.
Yeah.
Where like you leave a car overnight and it's just stripped right away because it's a city. You know,
so
I mean, it is a convertible and he left the top down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not surprised somebody did something to it. But yeah, they like spray painted it and took the wheels. Yeah. I don't know what they were doing with the fucking wheels.
At that point, you might as well just take the whole car. Just go for it.
You would think.
Yeah, it's easier to get the wheels somewhere if you take the car.
I would imagine.
They took the wheels from it and they go, okay, just roll them a couple miles to the chop shop.
Yeah, I mean, if you're that handy, why don't you just steal the whole car?
Yeah.
It was pretty nice.
I think it was probably like a couple of turn of the century kids and they just had planks of wood and they're just hitting those wheels along the road just as a game, you know?
So he's not going to be able to hide this. So the next scene, you'd think he's at work at the Peach Pit. No, he's having breakfast with his family in that type of breakfast that families have on television where it goes on forever. And you're like,
yeah, there's like endless time.
Where are you finding all?
Endless morning time. Space? Something is an absolute mystery to me. I do not know how you. Yeah, they're like on their third cup of coffee. And they're like, well, we should go to school.
So
and there's it's always like a full breakfast. Everyone has multiple foods in front of them.
Yeah.
I have my cereal and my eggs and bacon in front of me.
So there,
I have milk
and also this grapefruit
juice,
half,
coffee, grapefruit half, pancakes. Yes, please. Waffles. Put them on the pancakes. Sure.
So it all comes out. They reveal what happens. His family's concerned that he could have been driven permanently insane by taking Euphoria.
Yep.
There are going to be some changes around here now. What he does not reveal is who dosed him, even though he admits that he was dosed by someone else, that he was roofied. He doesn't reveal who
Brenda
it was.
Brenda does know that Emily did it. And Brenda and Emily have a very rough history. She does not like Emily when Emily first came to West Beverly. She dated Dylan one night and Brandon the next night. And that's Brenda's boyfriend and brother. And so she has hated Emily pretty much ever since, even though they make up for a little bit there. But eventually
doesn't work.
The two butt heads for the whole time.
Yeah. They do sound like butt heads. Yeah.
Or like Lockhorns.
They're married?
Yes.
I do believe in the canon of the show they are now. Brenda and Emily are now married. Yeah.
So Emily shows up and she and Brandon kind of make up, but not really. And Brandon's gonna have to make some changes too. He's not ready. She's like, next time I won't dose you with drugs. And he's like, I don't know if there'll be a next time. And then he goes to work, and he and Andrea catch up a little bit. And she is wearing a very, like a very grandma shirt. It's great.
It says, "Ask me about my grandson."
If she showed up wearing that, I wouldn't have batted an eye. I'd be like, "Yeah, that's normal. That's his character."
She's sitting down with a menu, and she takes her glasses that are on a chain around her neck and puts them on the end of her nose.
If she came and was like churning butter because she's like working at Colonial Williamsburg, I'd be like, "Yeah, that makes sense. That's that character." And that's basically the episode, guys. It was touching. We all learned something.
Yeah.
Some of us were changed irrevocably. And I kind of get why everyone's talking about this shit on Twitter.
This was the end of
full circle.
This was the end of Brandon and Emily Valentine's relationship. I don't know if Stuart said that explicitly.
But yeah.
So the end scene should have been him taking her stuff out of his locker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's not. Yeah, he's not going to. He's going to have to pick up all his stuff from her locker. Yeah.
So
you know what? Take all the stuff that you asked me to hold in my pockets for you. And it's all like feathers and shiny rocks that she picked up and just like pennies and screws
and
nails.
That's when you discover she's a magpie in disguise. It takes hard left turn into fantasy.
Wait a minute. You're a magpie, aren't you? And she's like, I didn't want you to find out this way. And she takes off her wig and revealing a bird's head.
Oh, man. Yeah. That would have been awesome.
And the next Monday at school, he's like, well, Emily was a magpie the whole time. And they're like, who's Emily?
Oh, my God. What a double twist.
So it seems like everyone got really mad at Brandon, which, as the point you're making, nothing really bad happened to him. And it seems like the really bad thing that happened was that they took his keys away and his car got wrecked. But it's not
he didn't do anything bad to anyone other than, I guess, put his trust in the wrong person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And the show punishes him quite a bit for that, which is it is weird. It's very weird that he's
a regular Job, this guy.
Yeah.
There is that episode later where his whole family and all his livestock are killed, and he argues with God, and then he gets a new family and new livestock, and he's like, the new livestock, fine, but I still miss my old family. Like, it's great to have this new family, but it's like, God, it's not.
Yeah, and God's like, ugh, doesn't anything please you?
Nothing's good enough for Job.
I would love it so much if every episode of 90210 ended with a kind of Doogie Howser-style wrap-up where Brandon argues with God about the events of the episode. That would be
wonderful. He's like, God, it seems like I really got punished for something that wasn't my fault. And God's like, Brandon, where were you when I created Behemoth and Leviathan? Come on, you're gonna tell me about the whirlwind all of a sudden?
Yeah, no, you're right. A serious 90210.
And then and then Mork walks in and he's like, are you done with the room? Because I need it to talk to the people of Ork.
Oh, yeah. Mork from Mork and Mindy, not yeah, he's, Mork he's from Mork Orson. And Gork, the orc gods from Warhammer. Thank you.
No.
That's a different Mork.
That's a reference you have to be a teen on 90210 to get, the Mork and Mindy thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. So how old are his parents, do you think? So this is 1990. His
Jim
parents have got to be in like their mid-40s at least, right?
Yep.
So they're
Jim
they're
and Cindy.
Boomers.
I would put at around 40 at least in the canon.
Yeah, so they're part of the trick boomers. Is you cast a dad who was balding. That's first step. You got to get as receding a hairline as possible, just to differentiate him from the teenage actors who have a normal receding hairline.
Yeah. The teenage actors who are 10 years younger than him, and because so like these they have experience with drugs, or probably like
they bring
in
that
the,
up
in,
they,
in
who, the
60s. Well, I mean, like these characters, I have to assume.
Well, that there is a line where the mother says that she was in college in the 60s, so she knows, and that's why she's scared that they'll turn into fire starters or some shit.
See, that is what happened to a lot of people. Yeah, that was the main issue of the 60s with all the telekinetic fire starters.
Yeah, it doesn't quite ring true to me, because as I understand it, that 60s weed was trash, apparently, from all accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
compared to modern weed, which I hear is really cool.
I think Cindy's talking about the sensation of smoking a cigarette too fast, basically, is what she had experienced in college.
Spinning around in an office chair a little bit too much.
She's worried that there might be a lot of coughing involved.
Yeah.
Just doesn't want him to get a sore throat.
So
I went to college in the 60s. I know what it's like to be slightly nauseous for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Get kind of a headache. All right. Well,
so this was a very special episode of Beverly Hills 90210, and of course that means that this was a very special
and of the Flop
yeah,
House.
Of
oh sorry,
two boy talking tube to two dudes tonight. That's right. And which is a Flop House mini brought to you by Minnie's Bar. We are a show that is on Maximum Fun. There's plenty of other great shows on there. Check that shit out. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, who are Dan McCoy and Elliot Kalin. I'm Stuart Wellington, and our producer, Alex Smith, has joined us as an expert. Thanks for tuning
in. I'm an expert, not a dude. I'm relinquishing my dude status so that the title of the show still makes sense. Yeah. I'm just making that clear to everybody. I know some people care about that kind of consistency.
Yeah.
Before you clog up my DMs again.
I believe there were three dudes on the previous show.
So Charlene and I were watching an episode, since we're still talking tube. Charlene and I were talking about the television show Catfish, which is on the tube, so this still counts. This is fair. We're still on base.
Yep.
And I was talking about, I was talking about of the three of us, the three main Flophousers, which of us would be most likely to be catfished by somebody? And I think it's me. I think I am most likely because, you know, I'm a big romantic at heart.
You know, I would have said Dan a long time ago, but now I do think it's you, Stu, because you live so much of your life online. Much more than we do, I feel like.
Super online. I'm so plugged in. Whereas
my online stuff is mainly limited to me promoting things on Twitter, and Dan's is mainly limited to the dumbest jokes on Twitter. And yeah, if you're living in the metaverse by this point. Yeah, you're half digital. You're reboot.
I'm committed to tying myself to this cycle that makes me sad all the time.
Yeah, I you know, sometimes I'm like, is there a place where I can see Stuart squatting? Like, just like, can I see him sticking his butt out while lifting large amounts of weight? And turns out there
Instagram
is.
Instagram and TikTok. It's on both of them.
Yeah, go look at it.
You can double up. Just like my two butt cheeks.
So congratulations on your upcoming catfishing. I hope it goes great.
Yeah, I mean, it never does. Sometimes people fall in love.
Oh, I would love to see an episode of like a good catfish
where it's like, oh, this is so much better than I expected.
Yeah, you're really underselling yourself. This is amazing.
There are enough episodes where it is like actually the person where I'm like shocked. I'm blown away. But most of them are not. Most of them are sad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
how many of them turned out to be actual catfish?
Oh, you would be surprised that it's most of them are actual catfish.
Oh, really? Wow. I mean, yeah, that would be a surprise to be like, I fell in love with the person of my dreams, and they're like, I have to tell you, I'm not a person at all. I'm a catfish.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like,
I'm a fish that's got big, like, whiskery
yeah,
things.
You think this is a, you thought that I was a man with a mustache, but no, this is actually long fish whiskers.
Let me take off my wig. I'm not Emily, your girlfriend. I'm a catfish.
Okay. I mean, it's weird. It's very weird, but you can't be too surprised. The show is called Catfish.
Yeah,
you can't
it's in the title.
Be like right super there. Shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's
that's the amazing thing.
Fool me once.
It's amazing how they keep it fresh every episode, so you're always wondering. And then afterwards you're like, right, because it's called Catfish, of course.
Keep it fresh like a delicious piece of catfish. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I've already done the sign off. So this was a postscript, I guess.
Yeah.
This
was the afterward where we found out what happened to all of us after the episode, which is we just kept talking like idiots.
It's the one show that has its own after show embedded in it.
So just
say goodbye or something.
Okay, bye.
By the way, I have some podcasts myself.
Oh, yeah. Let's plug.
Too late. Too late, Alex. Should have said something earlier.
Now let's...
just if you were not absolutely repulsed at listening to me speak along with three of your favorite parasocial relations, go ahead and check out Hal Dottie's Fast Track and the Big Howl and Possum podcast. And I produce this show, and I produce I Know the Owner with Charlene Wellington. So those are also... check out the Flophouse if you haven't heard it. That's a great show as well.
But
Stu and Charlene, I think, are you both on mainline episodes, and I'm on like a Patreon one of Fast Track. I'm just trying to sweeten the deal for listeners of our show.
Yes, Stuart is on, I believe, episode 4 of the first season of Hal Dottie's Fast Track. We wrote a song together about
going to the movies.
About going to the movie theater. And then Dan and I did I do parody songs on my bonus episodes, and Dan and I did Ziggy Stardust about
dipping potato dips. Chips and dip.
Chips and dip. We turned Ziggy Stardust into the bonus episodes, which you can get by going to patreon.com/HowlDawdy, HOWELLDAWDY. $5 a month gets you 3 bonus episodes. And the one with Dan, the parody episodes, what we do is we have a list of songs and a list of topics, and we roll 2 dice, and it decides what the song is and what the topic is. So we rolled Ziggy Stardust and Chips and Dip as the topic. The most recent one of those, we got Electric Feel by Management was the song that we were parodying. And the topic turned out to be electric eels as well. So we ended up having to do a parody of Electric Feel that's more about electric eels than the original song. So
nice.
And that's just how crazy we get with it over there in the Fast Track supporter Patreon.
Okay.
Well,
so now I'm going to say bye. Bye.
Bye. Oh, I've wanted to say that for so long.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.